This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello and good morning. Welcome to the Morning Run on BFM 89.9, the business station. It's Thursday, the 4th of October, 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm Melissa Idris. I'm going to be with you all the way till 10 o'clock today. And joining me on the show, Kusu Chuang.
All right, chaps.
And Joyce Go.
Selamat pagi.
That could not have been more different. Two ends of the spectrum. But good morning, guys. We would love to hear from you this morning. Join our conversation. It's lonely, just the three of us here in the studio. We want to hear from you. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. And throughout the day, I think today the biggest news has definitely got to be the fact that MACC has arrested Dathan Sri Rosmah Manso, and that she was detained yesterday at about 3:20 p.m. After her statement was taken, and today she will be charged at 8 a.m. So that's going to be the biggest story of the day.
Yeah, and past news reports, you know, quoting MACC sources, have said that she could face up to 20 charges, I think mostly involving money laundering.
The AMLA Act.
Right? Yeah, and so far, I think her husband, Dato' Sri Najib Razak, he has been charged with, I think he faces 32 counts, of which 25 are in relation to the 2.6 billion ringgit donation.
Apparently, she's also being sued by Global Royalty, you know, that jewelry firm.
Mm-hmm.
44 pieces. She took this, well, she didn't take, I think they sent, because high net worth clients, right? So they send you samples and you try them on.
For your sampling
pleasure. And then you return those that you don't want and then you keep those that you want, right?
Right.
In her case, she had 44 pieces, unfortunate number, valued at 60 million ringgit. But they still remain in the possession, apparently.
Right. So we're going to be crossing over to the BFM news team, who will be on the ground waiting for the proceedings to happen. And we're going to be getting some live updates from them, what to expect today, what the scenario is. There's a lot of social media chatter, guys, about whether or not Rosmah Manso will be made to wear orange. Because of the MACC, to don the MACC shirt.
But Dato' Sri Najib Razak didn't.
That's
he
right.
Wore and, a suit.
And MACC came under heavy fire, under heavy criticism for not asking Dato' Sri Najib Razak to wear the orange suit.
Okay.
And there were also other high-profile cases that were not made to wear the MACC jumpsuit. I don't know whether it's jumpsuit
orange
or not.
Orange, kind of.
Yeah.
Jumpsuits are no-no in any circumstances, let alone from MACC.
Let alone an orange one. But then again, it's not a catwalk.
It's not a catwalk.
Into the court. We'll keep you updated on that later this morning. Also, turning our attention to the US, we have more than 200 million mobile phones in the US receiving a test presidential alert notification. So this is actually, it's a trial that's designed to use in terms of an emergency. So emergency communication. So everyone who has a mobile phone gets this, like a text message, pops out on your phone, it buzzes on your phone, and it says, you know, I don't know what it says, but it says, this is a test, don't have to do anything.
Well,
but
It's supposed to warn you of any impending cataclysms, right? So back in the Second World War, allowed speakers and tube stations and stuff like that. Today, you've got your mobile phones. And I think that's very effective. Well, it's very useful because just about everybody has a mobile phone now. And imagine if everybody in Palu had a warning.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
They had a tsunami warning, right? Which they then withdrew.
Yeah, it was only a 30-minute warning.
Yeah.
And apparently the decoys, the beacons, water beacons that were supposed to be, to give them an early warning, was either damaged or
vandalized,
stalled,
or maybe battery.
Stolen. Yeah.
So imagine if that mechanism was to be implemented when Palu happened, you know, drastically lower death toll, presumably.
Right. So the presidential alert reads, this is a test of the National Wireless Emergency Alert System. No action is needed. But it's really intended to be used in terms of major threats like missile attacks, terrorism, or natural disasters. But get this, guys. Turns out that a few people had bandied together and decided that they wanted to sue this because they said that the technology was a violation of their rights to be free from government-mandated listening.
Gosh.
Wow.
So
they
you'd rather
for everything
run the risk of death than listen to what the government wants to say, which they deem as propaganda.
What if it's abused? What if this system?
Because so far
it's never been used before. Okay. This is the first time they're testing this.
They're supposed to do this every 3 years, right?
Well, they're supposed to test it every 3 years.
Test it every 3 years. Yeah.
But because it's called the presidential alert, and because in the US, politics is so partisan at the moment, the polarization is so wide. When you have the presidential alert, it's now being called the Trump alert.
Yeah.
And anything to do with that, of course, you pick one side or the other. So it might, I think the argument is, what if this was abused beyond just the man-made natural disasters?
Well, it'd be better to have it, I find, just in case, because you never know with everything that's happening right now. I mean, look at disasters, be it a terrorism, you know, it's good to keep people updated.
Well, as it is, really getting abused by so many unwanted messages anyway.
Yes,
do you know what I mean, right? Yeah, you just delete the fellow line. Up to 100,000 ringgit free, no collateral needed. Oh, just delete. Not that I don't need 100,000, but do you know what I mean?
Chong has such a practical solution for that. All right, after this, we're going to be looking at what Jack Ma's successor told Alibaba's employees. Apparently, he said, don't live for KPIs. Was he joking? We'll tell you next on BFM 89.9. 6:09 right now, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Melissa Idris with Kusu Chuang and Joyce Go. Any way you want it by Journey there. Now, in his first internal management strategy speech since being named Jack Ma's successor, Alibaba's new CEO, Daniel Zhang, he reminded managers in Alibaba that key performance indicators or KPIs, they should never be the sole reason for doing something. Right, and then the look on Joyce's face now. You should see it. It's radio, but you should see the look on Joyce's face.
Joyce, you studied accounting last time, didn't you?
Yes.
Hey, a bit of a numbers cruncher, are you?
Yes, I am. Ah. I was and I am, yeah. I don't know, I just... So coming back to this story, right, what he says is that, you know, if we live for KPIs and do something just for the sake of KPIs, then Alibaba is finished.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, talking about this, in other words, he's saying that if you're too focused on that, you might lose your creativity. I don't know, I'm
sure,
just reading
into
that. Sure,
so if you just focus on this set, this laundry list of KPIs that you need to hit by the end of the year, you're just focused on that task and you lose a sense of why that task needs to be accomplished. You lose a sense of your creativity, as you said, maybe even the culture of the company.
Well, it's worked for them so far. They've only been around about 19 years, which is not a lot, right? But they've got to about $500 million, which is a lot. So something would have worked for them. Their KPIs would have gotten them that far. I think the problem with KPIs is once you apply them on a broad-based basis across the whole organization, it doesn't account for the people who are not like Joyce, who are the plants, the flowers, the creative, the thinker types, right?
Maybe Alibaba got to where they are first through KPIs.
Absolutely.
Now when they're at this peak where they are, then you can say, don't need KPIs because you already hit well and beyond.
Okay, about making the creative parts and the cultural parts of a company part of the KPI?
So how do you embed that? Because that's the soft part, right?
So the KPI could be, how many times did you talk to someone outside of your department? or do you have, I mean, have you achieved any form of interaction outside of your department?
Yeah. So the Google philosophy, I think you have one day a week to do something completely up to you, which is right. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of embed that, right?
Yeah. So at the end of the day, KPIs.
That's how Gmail was formed, remember?
Gmail came out
of that 20% thing.
So see, you still need KPIs. I mean, it doesn't need to be strict just numbers. Did you hit profit or not? You know, it could be anything else. But you need kind of like a roadmap. I don't know. For me, I feel for work, it helps. For the employee, for the employer, for the bosses, it's a way to keep track.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you.
But do you think that if you don't meet the KPIs, because, you know, if you have the reason with KPIs is that that's how you benchmark your performance, right? But sometimes, like you said, Chuang, that it's not necessarily, it doesn't, you know, it's not a cookie cutter thing. So should KPIs then be tailored for each individual person as opposed to a role?
That would be ideal. Yeah, but how do you administer that? Because that would be a right old...
Before you sign on your contract, you, or at the negotiation with your boss, you talk about, you know, well, Could these be my KPIs? Or do you think that would create an unlevel playing field?
Well, I think, you know, this whole Belbin philosophy thing where you assess what kind of person you are, you assess what kind of mentality you are, and then from there you customize a bespoke set of KPIs for yourself.
My God, all the HR managers around the world will be going, oh, my goodness, like mortified. So much work.
Yeah, they will be mortified.
But we still need something to quantify. You still need something to kind of like measure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it could be curated, it could be personalized, it could be a standard KPI, but I think you still need a KPI.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, back when I was a journalist in Reuters, right, you were given like, I think 30 exclusives a month or something, or is it?
Yeah, they track. They do track, right? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you have to break a certain number of stories a month, right? You write a certain number of op-eds or columns a month and feature stories and kind of things, right?
They do track. Right? They used to track stories as well as clarifications.
And I think the problem with those KPIs is if you meet them and then it dictates your bonus and your increment, right? These two monetary results. But the problem is it's the difference between getting a 3% increment or a 2.5% increment. It's the difference between getting 2 months bonus or 1.5 months bonus. So what I'm saying is the reward is not huge. What if the reward was enough to say, hey, I'm going to go and meet those soft and hard KPIs and get something worthwhile? Because what is half a month nowadays, right?
So
what is 1 percentage point in terms of increment? But if you're making 2,000 ringgit a month, what is 100 bucks, right? Sure. You know what I mean, right?
So what you're saying is that all jobs should have some form of KPIs, but It depends on what happens when you meet them or you don't.
Yeah, you
got to
make it worth your while as well.
Right. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And also industries. Different industries might have different KPIs, different measures, and I think it's good to motivate for us, like the staff.
Mm. Well, we're going to come back and take a look at this survey that recently found a majority of millennials are experiencing buyer's remorse after purchasing their first home. We'll tell you the details next. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, Aretha Franklin there, Daydreaming. 6:20 on the clock here with The Morning Run. Melissa, Joyce and Chuang here to keep you company as you get ready for the day. Now, we're taking a look at a survey done by Bank of the West, which found that nearly 70% of millennial homeowners regret their purchase. So the survey found that the respondents cited three reasons, the major reasons for the regret. First of all, overspending on the down payment. Secondly, underestimating the ongoing costs. And thirdly, settling for a home that wasn't quite right.
Yeah, one of them was the fact that they bought out of FOMO. And FOMO, in case you're a bit like me, which is a bit antiquated, it's the fear of missing out. Okay, so it's a Gen Y, Gen Z term.
FOMO.
FOMO.
Okay, fear of missing out, which is true. So I thought this was really interesting. So apparently the survey found that millennials experience the fear of missing out, and they reacted to that by spending their money on a mortgage payment. Okay, so, you know, everyone's saying get on the property ladder before it gets too expensive.
Yeah.
So even though they may not be able to afford it, even though the house may not be right for them, even though they may not want that financial commitment at this point in time, they did it out of that fear of missing out.
Yeah, there's no right answer for this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. Also, a couple of other reasons, I think, is because they're saying that they would rather have experiences over mortgages. So a lot of young people now, they want to spend more on you know, getting memories, experiences,
holidays, concerts,
living.
Yeah,
look, I don't blame them. You know, right now the social climate is a bit like in the 60s when America was going to get great guns, hammer and tongs. And remember the Bay of Pigs? People thought they were going to die tomorrow. So when you think mortality is around the corner, no, I'm serious, right?
Okay.
Do you remember John F. Kennedy, right? The whole arms race, right?
A little before my time, but that's
sorry.
Okay.
We've got ourselves to blame for this. We've got ourselves to blame for how Gen Ys and millennials feel the way they do, because they want to live in the moment. They want to live the experience now because they don't know what's around the corner. They've been through financial crises. They've been through several scares from a military standpoint. They think that America's Donald Trump might go to war anytime with Russia or North Korea or China or read any of the above. So I don't blame them.
Yeah, also in this global world, you know, a lot of them, they move quite often. You know,
nomads, right?
Yeah.
And why not?
Mm. Yeah, so they don't want to be tied down, and you know, buying a house is such a big purchase, and you're committed to that for 30 years.
Absolutely, you're in jail.
John is coming at this from a bit of a bias.
No, because actually, my advice to young people is buy a property as soon as you can. right? If you can afford it, but the condition is if you can afford it and if you're willing to stay the course. If you're not, then don't bother because you're going to be in jail. You have to pay the mortgage payments every single month. Otherwise, you'll be put in jail, literally.
It's a commitment, for sure. So when I saw the survey, they say nearly 70% of millennials homeowners regret buying. That's a high number of, you know, people to regret buying.
I wonder whether this regret could be temporary, right? So, you know, in this period of time, yes, it's painful. Yes, you know, you're not happy maybe. But the good thing is you have an asset. You're on the property ladder. So perhaps the regret is temporary. Like with all big ticket items, we have buyer's remorse. You know, so it comes up. We second guess ourselves because it's so much money. But maybe millennials dwell on the, I'm not generalizing here, but perhaps, you know, this could be just a phase. I do think the biggest worry for me on part of this list is when they say that they underestimated the ongoing cost, you know, the cost of renovating and building a house. And for settling a home that wasn't quite right, that for me is the biggest red flag. Buying a home is not so much of a problem. You know, if you're young and, you know, you regret because you want to go on holiday, use that money to go on holiday, that's temporary. You'll get over it.
But that's okay. You don't have to live there. You can sell it, right? Yeah, and that's the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow.
But shouldn't you be buying a house for you to live in?
Not necessarily.
Your first home, though.
No, because my advice to young people is not necessarily because you want to live in it, but because you want to have an investment which you can then dispose of and you've got a bit of a nest egg when the time comes.
My advice to young people is don't listen to people who tell you you need to buy a house. If they say you need to buy a house, they don't know what they're talking about. Mm. Rent for as long as you can.
Exactly.
Buy when you can.
Buy when you're ready.
The guy that is doing the designs for my new website, right, is this Moroccan guy. He's only about 21 years old. Very talented guy. He's a video editor. He's a designer. He presents his own YouTube channel. He's a very talented guy, right? He's been traveling for the last 1.5 years. He's from Morocco, right? Okay. French Moroccan. The experiences that he's had, oh my good lordy, lordy, lord.
A bit
right? Jealous,
are we?
Very jealous. No, jealous, right? But today, you know, it's very different when you travel when you're 21 and when you're 31 and you're 41 and you're 51.
So you bring those experiences with you.
Absolutely.
That worldview.
When you travel at the end of your career, when you're 51, 61 years old, it's very different from when you're 21 years old. I knew people who did the hippie trail in the 60s. And do you know what I mean? They carry that experience with them for the rest of their lives. They never regret it. They didn't say, oh, I wish I'd started work earlier. Oh, I wish I'd bought that BMW.
No one ever says, I wish I started work earlier. Yeah. No one has ever said that engraved on their tombstone.
Exactly.
All right, we've got the 6:30 News Bulletin coming up next. But to take you there, the Chili Peppers with Under the Bridge, BFM 89.9. This is The Morning Run. You're listening to Melissa, Joyce and Chuang today, 6:38 right now. That was Billy Joel with It's Still Rock and Roll to Me. Now, we have a pretty obvious survey, a survey with pretty obvious findings. It's a survey done by Fitness First and ChiliSauce.my, and they spoke to over 3,700 Malaysians. And what they found was they asked for the top three reasons why Malaysians don't exercise. And it's funny, because the first one, of course, is a lack of motivation. But the second second reason for Malaysians not exercising is not having the time to go to the gym or not having someone to go with. So pretty obvious, you guys?
Yeah,
they're missing out a big start because exercise is so amazing for you. I mean, I think for me, the biggest reason to go is the endorphins you feel after you exercise, right? It's that natural high you get, and it's very, very addictive.
Yeah, see, I always feel good after I work out. Yeah. I feel terrible in the lead up to it. So psyching myself to put on my gym shoes, oh my goodness.
Yeah. Actually, I'm guilty of all these three reasons. Lack of motivation, not having time, no one to go with. I have slacked off a lot, I think. You know, life happened when, especially after I had my second kid. Before that, I was quite active doing Pilates and all that. But after my second kid, kind of really no time. So I don't know whether that's a good reason, though. So recently, I started to put in effort again. And yesterday, I went for a class at the gym with our producer, Shaz.
Yeah.
But also, it's having someone to go with.
Like a gym buddy. That's why the third reason, the top three reasons, one of them is having no one to go with. So if you partner up or you buddy up with someone and, you know, you have that accountability, right? So even if you're super lazy and you want to flake out on exercising that day, someone's waiting.
Hey, come, we're late. You know what I mean?
So my gym buddy is... I love her, but she's quite intimidating. So I don't want to cancel on her because she's very disciplined. So she
does she have muscles on her muscles? She does, right?
Like clearly. Popeye. Yes. Yes, but you know, that's one way for you to, I guess, get over the lack of discipline. But the other reason that I was that's further down the list, which I it resonated with me, was that some people find gyms intimidating.
Yeah.
I find gyms quite intimidating. I work out in this lowly corner of the gym in my building. So no one knows.
And you go in there, you see all the equipment. It's very daunting because you don't know which one to start with.
And you don't know if you're doing it right.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. So I think a lot of people don't realize that exercise, this, you don't have to go to a gym to work out. There's a lot of things you can do outside in the natural setting. I don't like gyms because it's air-conditioned. And air-conditioned rooms, which is enclosed, full of germs and bacteria. I'm not kidding you, right? Weights, dumbbells, exercise machines, all that handles, all full of bacteria. I don't want, you know. So I like.
So
to
you
go
don't
want to
share? You do it yourself?
I like go by myself. Yeah, in my own time, and I go to the park, I go to the beach, and walk on the road. You know, when I had kids, right? I used to put my kids on my back and do push-ups with them. So do you know what I mean? So you can. Yeah, there's a lot of things
I
you can
love
do.
That.
Okay. Yeah, I love that.
I tried. There was a time when I tried watching on TV. Like you put on YouTube, like those kind of like lessons and then those
high-intensity
aerobic
training you can do all by yourself.
Not really high-intensity, very low level, very beginner level drum, not at your level yet. So I tried doing that in front of the TV with my kids. But after a while, we got distracted.
That's I guess, one of the reasons why when you are doing it alone or you're doing it at home, I think that it can be quite difficult to keep that motivation, right? Who's keeping count on whether you finish it within that, you know, that 15 minutes or 20 minutes that you've decided to do it? I also think that, you know, having these really high-end gyms, that is also one of the reasons. I'm not sure what the etiquette is in gyms, do people come up and tell you that you're using the exercise machine wrong?
The busybodies law or the personal trainers, they want
to get
some.
I find that so annoying. No one's ever done that to me before.
I don't like gyms at all. I don't like the fact that I've got to share equipment with other people. I don't like the whole, you know, the main things. You also got to pay for gyms and they're not cheap. They're increasingly more expensive.
But I feel like I will enjoy classes. As you know, I like to be around people.
I need, I know, yeah. So
it'd be great to have, you know, be in a class or go with a friend. I think that helps. Or maybe like Chuang, you say, you don't have to go to a gym, but maybe invite a friend.
Tamantung Park is amazing. I go there all the time. Mm.
So we have SK Wong weighing in on the conversation on WhatsApp. He says, the reason Malaysians don't exercise is because they're stuck in the jam daily, having to leave the house by 5 a.m. and reach home far past surpassing 8 p.m. So unlike people in Hong Kong, where they walk a lot to MRT stations, climbing staircases and whatnot. So Warga Kota KL is slightly different.
Well, Hizwani Hassan, the mindset has to change. You don't need a gym. You don't need to pay to exercise. The world has become too commercial. Hizwani, I agree with you 120%.
I think you've just gotten a fan there. And just a note about Hizwani, I think he was weighing in also about our conversation a bit earlier, that millennials, 70% of millennials apparently regret their first, the big ticket purchase of buying their first home. And his wife, he says that many may regret because the easiest and cheapest upfront way to buy a home is from a developer. And you buy from a plan and a drawing before it's built, so you don't get to see what you're buying.
That is true. Sometimes you walk into a show house and they ID it so well, right? And you're like, oh yeah, this is so nice. And then, but when you get the actual keys, you go into an empty lot, you don't realize how much money you actually have to pump into, you know, putting in the cabinets, chairs and table.
Renovations.
Yeah.
Ro weighed in on WhatsApp also saying, if you're intimidated by the equipment in the gym, just use the dumbbells. They're called that for a reason.
Brilliant.
All right. We'll be back with more news and analysis about the use of Bahasa Malaysia in education. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9. 6:49 right now. You're listening to The Morning Run. Melissa Chuang and Joyce here with you. Two Door Cinema Club there. Something good can work. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for your messages. We want to say hi to Robin, who says, good morning, Penangites.
Good morning.
Good morning.
To exercise is a decision. I'm also stuck at work from 6 a.m. till 8 p.m. And I'd like to walk the malls just to make up my 10,000 steps. No shopping, but a cool, bright, safe environment. So if you think outside the box, you'll find a way. So there you go. Aris says Malaysians are just lazy. And he says that motivation is not what you need to exercise. It's discipline,
right,
which is fair. And Lishan, thank you for your WhatsApp message this morning asking, what are your thoughts on women-only gyms?
I think that's good.
That's good. I think there is one. There's one around Mount Kiara area, I hear, but I haven't been.
There's actually a few around.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's. I don't think it should be just women-only gyms. Sometimes, for me, I think it's not so much that. Perhaps the intimidation aspect of it. The muscle gyms can get quite muscly and male-dominated. Testosterone-dominated.
Getting hit on as well. So you want to avoid all that because you want to then just go there to work out. You know what
sure.
I mean? Yeah.
And that's a conversation we're going to be carrying forward later today with the idea of gender segregation and what's happening in Terengganu. But let's turn our attention to comments made by the Education Minister, Dr. Mazli Malik. He's encouraged schools to screen Bahasa Malaysia shows to enhance proficiency in the national language. And his specific recommendations were that that you should watch P. Ramlee movies and the cartoon series Upin and Ipin, and that should prevent students from feeling bored while learning the language. What do you guys think about this?
Well, it seems a bit banal and a bit simplistic, but then upon closer scrutiny and thinking about it, actually, he's got a point.
Right? That watching shows could help increase proficiency.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, in America, when you go and listen to those talk shows and people who are in their, you know, bit 50s and 60s, Morgan Freeman, for example, he said that back in the day when he used to grow up in wherever he was, he used to watch people like Lucille Ball, right? Remember her, right? Hello, something.
Sure. Maybe before our time
Bob
again.
Hope no, I think she was guys. In quite popular movies, but
yeah.
All right, so watching entertainment.
Yeah, television, I mean, a lot of people learn Cantonese through watching video dramas.
TVB?
Right? TVB.
Well, that was a bit quick, Joyce.
Joyce, go out.
Well, I think, with kids now, screen time, that's quite big. You know, parents try to screen their screen time. But yeah, if you look, watching Upin and Ipin, if that helps them with their Bahasa Malaysia, that's great. But for me as a parent with young kids, I'm hoping that we'll see more coming up from
the local industry?
Coming up from the education minister. Like whether is he going to do more, you know, rather than just to give, you know, just watch Upin and Ipin or change to black shoes. He's done quite a lot for the universities. I think he's looking into revamping that, reforming that. That's great. But
well,
I'm hoping
he's been in headlines for all the wrong reasons and sometimes for the right reasons as well.
I think most of our ministers are
finding their way.
Yeah, correct. So I'm hoping to hear more from him. Like, what else is he doing for primary schools and secondary schools, the education system?
Yep.
So more structural reform, I see. Mm-hmm. Okay. But if I were to come back to this, I guess I'm of two minds. I do think that watching TV, entertainment is a good way to get someone exposed to a language they want to become proficient in. I think for me personally, I used to put subtitles on, and that helped me with English. So watching TV movies, I would watch it with subtitles and I would relate the words to what I read. But I also think I can't discount the reading aspect of it. So for me, the language proficiency really comes from the reading.
Yeah. And writing it out.
Reading especially. So not so much watching, you know, a 20-minute cartoon may not be as you might not have as much of an impact as if you watch novel. I have to say, I sometimes struggle with my Bahasa, and I'm learning.
No, you're right.
But I'm currently learning to become more proficient in BM by reading Harry Potter books in Malay.
Absolutely.
I'm
book
three now, guys.
Wow.
No, what
she
you
has
say
a
is a
point.
Good point.
Yeah.
Because TV shows are an entry point, an entrepot to the wider world of education, right? Because once you start to watch, then you start to read more. And then from there, then you branch out. It's a great transitionary thing.
But it helps you with the conversation part as well.
Sure.
I think coming back to Zhuang's TVB example, that's where I picked up Cantonese. Because, you know, I'm from Penang, it's Hokkien all the way, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But and with subtitles, it helped because you put on the English subtitles and that's where I picked up some words. And, you know,
so many
but
of my friends learn Cantonese that way. I never did because I just used to never watch them. It's just ridiculous. But.
but I guess reading would definitely help deepen that even more.
Sure.
For a language.
Reading and also listening to quality radio shows like the one we have on BFM.
Between 6 and 10 a.m. on weekdays.
Not just that, but for Malay language proficiency, listen to Bila Larut Malam.
Oh, yeah.
We have a great selection of Malay songs as well. Paul Lau has tweeted in and he is asking, is this an admission that our teachers are less effective than TV in teaching Malay?
No, it's not. I think it's an offhand remark by Mazli. You know, it's one of those things that sometimes gets taken out of context, which is one of those offhand gestures. But you know, Yeah, but the whole education system needs reform. We know all about that, no question.
All right, well, tell us what you think. We want to know. So if BM isn't your first language, how do you become fasih? Do you think that this is a good proposal to encourage watching shows in Bahasa Malaysia to improve students' proficiency in the language? We would love to hear from you. Our WhatsApp number is 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. The 7 o'clock news bulletin is coming up next and Counting Crows will take you there with Accidentally in Love. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.